over the last two or three years, I've liked several women poets better than men poets. But there's no reason for me to just kind of like fall on my knees and say I love women. But I do love women, but in bad ways, not just the good ways. There's a big kind of pressure to come to some kind of political understanding of literature, and I think it's important to be tempted by that, you know, at least understand that we're all limited and we're all in a box. But I think that poetry is something that, to some degree, should transcend all those issues. And I know that I'm not big enough for that to happen, but I do think I like some poets who express, let's say, a political vision or a gender vision or a cultural vision. Aren't you of a generation that should be free of a lot of concerns about, for instance, taking from everywhere? You should be able to rob everything, right?
Should be able to, but I don't know, like you were talking about before, sometimes I write stuff, and I mean, I was going to ask you the question too. Larry Levis once said in an interview, and I've been obsessed with this question, if you don't like something, like I guess the deepest core of the self, burn it. You know, no matter what the workshop says, no matter what the journals say, no matter what anyone says, if it's not, you know, I guess coming from you, just get it out of there. And you know, all that idea of vision, can you turn that into something that really represents you? And I don't know, I'm still, I guess, juggling all those questions.
Well, he would seem to bear that out in his own work, you know, that kind of really fierce individual stance. I mean, I understand that. I don't think I'm good enough to do that. What if it had made like a gajillion dollars? I mean, you could change your name, right? I mean, there's a limit to character, right? I mean, I don't know. I kind of am on board with him, though. I think it's pretty important that you be serious. And I mean, the only way you can be serious is to represent your own sense.
One of the things I think that happens to a lot of us is that if as undergraduates we are English majors, that may be a disastrous thing. I recall one time hearing Toni Morrison say in response to a question, and I think what had commercial motivations behind the question, but this person asked her, who do you have in mind when you write? And of course, for her, that could possibly be a political question as well. What audience do you aim towards or something like that? But her answer was not only wonderful for her, but it was a big challenge for me, because she said, I always try to write the kind of work I would like to read. And when I asked myself that evening after I got home from that literary event, are you writing the kind of work you like to read? The answer was no. I was writing the kind of work I thought I ought to write.
Those are very different things, aren't they?
Yeah. It took me years to recover properly from the journey that set me on, and it was a good journey, it was the right journey. But I mean, I was almost like I felt like I had to tear everything down to the ground and build it all up again. And it's along the lines of what you've been talking about, that there was a kind of inauthenticity, and I'm not talking about authenticity of subject matter or authenticity of that I had a particular poetic territory I had to claim for myself or something like that. It wasn't that. It was I doing something that just really got me going, you know, got me excited? And was I sufficiently daring? Was I sufficiently risk-taking? And all kinds of things came into that to ask myself, would I just really love to sit down and read this? You know, and that changed things for me.
Robert Hass has some things that he writes. Like, he's got a poem about, I forget the title, but he says basically, when you're smooth, you're dead. And I think one of the things that we like as writers is smoothness. You know, I mean, fluency, super fluency. And when I think about it as a reader, I mean, somebody's got to get to like Dylan Thomas or Seamus Heaney stage before that kicks in. I know I care about the person I perceive behind the language more than the language. And I know I tend to write as though you could get this kind of whipping dervish of language going, and finally people would all get in that and go down your drain and leave money and be gone. It bears a lot of thought. The thought I've been having for years that's difficult, I haven't been able to perfectly manage a dramatic monologue, and trying to figure out how dramatic monologues work. I mean, Ann Carson's one of the people that gives rise to the thought. One of my favorites of hers is the Glass Essay. But what I was trying to think about, if you're writing a dramatic monologue, the way to access that is to understand that you are mostly, that the difference between you and the worst human being who ever lived, as far as what might get put into a poem, is very small. You know, that you'd have to like home in on your own true feelings. If even if you were writing from the point of view of who's the man who just died, and Milosevic, yeah. If you were writing from his point of view, you'd have to write from your own point of view and assume that that part that makes Milosevic the murderer, the horrible murderer, does not make him inhuman. That there's something else going on there. The reason I started getting into this dilemma is I was trying to write this point of view, trying to write from the point of view of a racist, trying to write a book about that. And truly, I was trying to write in this latest book, I tried to write one from a point of view of a Democrat. And then the Republican, I had to go to third person. I just could not bring myself to do that, you know, and I know that that's a limitation, right? You should be able to inhabit that persona. No, and I've had people, Herbert White, I've had people sort of turn on me, you know, for having, you might have too, over the years. Herbert White is, what is it? When I did it to you, it felt good. I think that's the way the poem starts. It's like Peter Lorre should be reading the whole poem. Bedard is interesting that way. I found Bedard pretty challenging because I don't know how you guys felt, but I started reading from a different ear, and I heard him. He just seemed flat as a flitter, and then his good poems, they hang around pretty well. He's doing something very, very unique, and he has a very good ear. It's not the ear that you usually hear. Gluck's poems are interesting, I think. She's got a new book out, Averno, and I'm curious to hear what people think about it, because I don't like it as well, and everybody is saying it's the best book she's ever written. And sometimes I change my mind and form opinions too early. For instance, they're out of like I hate purple. She put the word purple down, and I start hating it. You know, they're for really like shallow, chintzy reasons. But I thought The Seven Ages, that book of hers, was just a knockout. And she writes every line like it can't be taken back. But they're like, I hate my sister's children. I don't hate my children. You know, it's like, you go, wait. She doesn't use many images anymore. Just pretty much seems to be saying it flat out when they're working. She seems to be able to say mean things in a poem. And by doing that, be able to say this other side of really romantic, you know, sort of like tender feeling things. I think, like, if you think of, like, the language itself as an image, that's pretty healthy. You know, if you thought about how language is realistic, it's not realistic in the same way that a sculpture, for instance. If a sculpture is realistic, if Greg sat very still, and I was able to create him, well, take the wax image of John Lennon being shot in your poem, you know. I mean, that's visually visual realism. But if you thought about verbal realism, it has more to do with sound, with something sounding like it's not, you know, not poetry, like Love in a Warm Room in Winter by James Wright. The trouble with you is you think all I want to do is get you in bed and make love with you, and that's not true. I was just trying to be friends. I mean, I'm not sure I'd talk that way, but It doesn't seem to be poetry. It seems like something somebody might say. To me, that's realism, linguistically, you know, constructed, you know, and there are all kinds of possibilities. You don't have to be a realist, but I think people tend to think of realism in terms of how the language represents, rather than language is a, language is an image. It's a representation, not a, you know, not a thing. It's hard to get it to be temperamental, isn't it? You know, to get that quality which drama has to have to get it into a poem and also have it be artful. And poetry's a great art. I mean, it's great in that nobody's ever written one, but we all know that. I mean, do you think that's a possibility that nobody's ever written a poem, that poetry really doesn't exist? There's just this ideal of something that we're all fools enough to believe, but that the people who are riding tractors happily through the meadows are thinking, well, I've got hemorrhoids, but I'm not a poet. what do you think? The poetry books that might sell, they always seem to be connected to some other social movement, you know, or something like that. I mean, for instance, if you wrote a book about your recovery from an attempted suicide, it might draw a lot more readers for some extra poetical reason. I think feminism was that way for a long time with, I think, Adrienne Rich books would sell a lot of copies, you know. I guess not many poets think about, maybe that's for you guys today, think about how to make, call it a novel, and it will immediately sell more books. Just to be called a novel, we should do that. People say, well, but how is this a novel? I think I take identity for granted. It seems to me that poems are often held together by personality, but by a personality that actually is created, but that tends to be, that tends to exhibit something that you've seen in the actual world. And it may be problematical. I mean, in terms of escaping identity, one of the things that my father would do is at funerals, he would express sympathy to widows in such a way that would require the woman to go into therapy for 9 or 10 months. And he meant the best. I mean, it created strong, tender feelings in people, you know. I just want to tell you about something that Roy did when we were young that I think you would appreciate, when he saved a little blind girl, you know, that kind of thing. And just, you know, some woman who was medicated to a point to where she was going to do fine, but it was like he would cut right through the medication. It was the habit of his personality to try to deepen a feeling, you know, somehow. And there are all of these habits that one finds one disgusting in oneself, maybe. One of them is, like, to me, is lightening things. It's just sort of irony as a part of the kit. I guess the southern things are probably, sometimes they're there and sometimes they aren't. You know, I could take a road through those. I could take a pretty easy road through a book that would not suggest southernness, but in general, it may be a weakness, but the images that I tend to have written seem to be images that I have either seen or that I've been told about. The places are places I know. I love the advice, and I don't think it is the only advice, but maybe it was Wendell Berry who said, I never like to write about a word that I do not hold against the world. I do not like to write about a doorknob to one I do not picture a very specific doorknob. To me, that's kind of it's not a bullshit. It won't cut all bullshit out. But it seems very important to be selecting from among the things of the world. I don't know any other alternative, actually. But as far as the sequencing of that and the way it's put together, I can't imagine a way to tell the truth. I have an urgency that probably comes from the childhood religion that I had to tell the truth, and it is a bad reason to drink. As a young person, I was not a fighting drunk, but I was a serious sex drunk. If I ever got drunk, man, I was after it. And as I got a little older, something worse happened. As I got drunk, I felt the need to tell the truth. Are any of you like that? That's worse than fighting. And I know part of that informs poetry, and I guess all of us are caught in that bind, in that some of our primary energies are pretty pure. They're like the desire to tell the truth in our work, the truth of our feelings or whatever. It seems very important, and it seems very important also to have kind of a Mr. Full of Shit pointing back at yourself and looking at it. Not to a point where it's paralyzing.